Forward momentum.
Mason, it has come to my attention. You have recovered samples from the site of the Cybergenics building.
That's correct, Chairman Rosenkreutz.
To what purpose?
Genom invested quite heavily in Flint's company. It seems a shame to waste that capital when some results may yet be realized.
Hermes, a messenger of the gods, associated with intelligence and secrets. Yet I question the wisdom of not destroying the biocomputer and all traces of it.
Sir, the samples are closely contained and are quite dormant. Even if they were to reactivate, my facility is a black box completely cut off from outside data connections. Further, the staff is entirely human. No boomers are allowed. There is no chance of a reoccurrence.
I see. Still, keep a close watch upon the project. We can allow no mistakes.
Of course. Thank you, sir.
I further understand. Negotiations with the Whitmark Corporation proceed apace.
They do. We've agreed in principle to the terms. Once their mass program goes into production, we will engage in several interesting projects with Whitmark.
I understand your operatives detected a possible difficulty.
A minor obstacle only. Rhodes dealt with it and tried to hide it from me, but his men aren't as well trained as mine are.
I see. Speaking of, I have a task I require of you.
Yes?
There are new pawns in the game. Observe.
Video from the incident on the freeway.
Indeed. This is not the first time these Night Sabers have come to my attention. I've had Madigan suppressing all reports about them, but their actions are becoming too flamboyant to hide.
I will see to their elimination at once.
That is not my wish. For now, merely identify them. I want to know everything. You may bring Madigan into this as well, but keep Genom's hands clean. Use other means.
You wish to use these pawns, I take it?
They will have their uses, yes. That'll be all.
Very good, sir. Chairman Rosenkreutz. Forgive me, but when Hermes nearly destroyed the OMS, there was one section it couldn't penetrate. What is it?
We all have our secrets, Mason. I am not foolish enough to tell you all of mine.
Forward Momentum presents Bubblegum Crisis. Mega Tokyo 2047, the story of the Night Sabers. February 8th, 2047. Lina Yamazaki's apartment, Mega Tokyo.
Ever have one of those days where, when it's over, you're amazed you didn't tear someone's head off? I've been having a whole week like that. Just one little thing after another. And to cap it all off, some dirtbag on the subway grabbed my ass as I was leaving. I mean, the nerve of some people. So, to say I was frazzled when I finally dragged my sorry self up the stairs and got to the front door of my apartment is an understatement. As soon as I unlocked the door, though, a delicious aroma washed the day's cares from my mind instantly. Irene had cooked dinner. Not only that, she made her famous top-secret chicken. Back when we were college kids living off stipends, it was our one luxury, our comfort food of choice. I could have kissed her feet. Irene appeared in the kitchen archway.
You've been so good about letting me stay here, I figured this was the least I could do.
Oh, Renie, if you were a man, I'd marry you. 20 minutes later, I was lost in dinner. Seared chicken breast in a white wine-laced cheese sauce, with slightly spiced croutons and sliced mushrooms over a bed of rice. My soul was swathed in warm, rich, fluffy blankets of goodness. We chatted about work. I vented about the train incident. It was a great way to close the day.
Oh, I almost forgot.
Irene jumped up and went into the living room. She came back a moment later holding an odd book.
I was going through one of my boxes and I found this.
She flipped it open and pulled out a small plastic circle. It looked like an old school CD, but it was half the diameter and it was green plastic.
Ever seen anything like it?
Nope. I took it from her hand. The disc was heavy for its size. There was no label. I have no idea, but a friend of mine might know.
Oh?
Yeah. In fact, I'm going to see her tomorrow night. You want me to show it to her?
Sure, if you don't mind.
She set the book on the table, almost affectionately. No problem. If you don't mind me prying, what's the book?
Hmm? Oh, it was Eric's journal. He always told me that his heart was mine, his mind was his, and his soul was in this book. Kind of odd sentiment, but I like having it here.
Irene was getting better at talking about Eric, but it was still painful for her. Even now, I could see her starting to fall into one of her funks. Okay, you know what would finish this night off, right? She sighed wearily.
Ice cream and chick flicks again?
You got it! You break out the strawberry cheesecake swirl. I'll go grab a movie.
All right. Just please, no more Pretty Woman.
What's wrong with Pretty Woman?
Nothing. The first 50 times.
Warehouse District, Southern Mega Tokyo.
A big problem facing the band, almost since its formation, was finding rehearsal space. Renting an actual studio was way too expensive. We could have rehearsed at my place, or rather the old parking lot in the Rift my trailer was parked in right now, but that was outside, and it was still too damn cold. Fred, the bassist, came up with a solution. The lot of us pulled what cash we had and rented a man cave. It was a glorified storage unit, really, but it had power, climate control, and even a small sink and refrigerator for beer and snacks. Best of all, though, it had no neighbors to complain when we got loud. Rehearsal was just wrapping. The guys had already gone. I sat on a stool, plunking away at an old keyboard JB had brought in, trying in vain to track down a melody that kept defying me.
Wow, that sounds pensive.
I sprang straight up, and I may have let out a small sound. Christ, Sylvie, don't do that!
Sorry, you were miles away. Something bothering you?
Just trying to get this stupid melody pinned down.
No, I meant something besides music. You were out of it for most of rehearsal.
Anyone ever tell you reading minds is creepy?
Yeah, my ex-husband. Now what's eating you?
I sighed and gave in. Sylvie would just keep asking if I didn't talk to her. A friend. Good friend. She's normally solid as a rock, but she's had a real short fuse the last few weeks.
She ain't on the red, is she?
The what?
The red. Haven't you seen it? Lots of people around town are taking it. It makes you angry and aggressive.
Why the hell would anyone take a hit that makes them angry?
'Cause it gives you power. It makes you want to fight, to lash out. Folks today turn to this just to feel something.
I shook my head. No, that's not her.
You sure? How well do you know her?
That bugged me all the way home. I mean, hell, I was so preoccupied I was actually obeying the speed limit. How well did I know Celia? She'd always been firm, but kind, too. She knew we all had reasons to be there, but she also knew we had our own secrets and breaking points. Lately, though, it seemed like she was trying to force us as close to those breaking points as possible. The more I thought about it, the more questions I had. Finally, I decided I needed to do something about it. I reached up and tapped the voice command button on my helmet. Call Nene. A few moments passed.
Hello?
Hey, it's me. You got a minute?
Sure, Pris. What's up?
That night, a couple weeks ago, when Celia smacked Mackie.
Yeah?
It seems so out of character. So odd. And it got me thinking, how well do we actually know her?
What do you mean?
What did I mean? Like, where did she come from? I don't mean her parents or that stuff. I mean, what is she up to? Why did she form the Nightsabers in the first place? For that matter, how does a girl with no real scientific background develop such advanced tech in the first place?
I don't really know. I asked her once and she refused to tell me. All she'd say is that they were an offshoot of something her father designed years ago.
Boomer tech?
No, not really. Some of the musculature is vaguely similar, but that's it.
Hmm.
Pris? What are you thinking?
Nothing. Thanks, Nene. I cut the call. So, it wasn't just me. I'd have to go straight to the source and ask.
Apartment in the Sodom Ward, southwestern Megatokyo.
At just the damnedest time you can imagine, the freaking cell phone had to ring. So much for a relaxing afternoon. I reached to answer it, and beneath me Amanda stirred.
Baby, no.
I waved her aside. Yeah, shut up. Daddy's working. What?
We have a problem. There's an anomaly in Yamada's stuff.
An anomaly? What is this, Star Trek?
He burned 27 discs.
And we recovered 27. What's your point?
No. We recovered 26 and one blank.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ. And you're just telling me this now? He done Yamada, what, months ago? How freaking slow was our lab boy that this was only surfacing now? Alright, go to Yamada's place. Search it top to bottom.
You think I'd be calling you if it was that bloody simple? I'm standing in it now. Place is cleaned out.
Cleaned out?
Yamada's girl, she's gone. All their stuff is gone. Place hasn't been lived in for weeks.
Okay, bail. I'll figure something out.
Right.
And hey, any of this shit comes back on me? You remember what I said when I hired you?
Yeah.
Say it.
You said there were laws against people like me. People with boomer-level cybernetic replacements.
That's right. If I go down for your fucking screw-up, I ain't gonna be there to stop that package from landing on the AD police's lap. Think about it, Tin Man. He hung up.
You promised me all your attention.
Shut up, Amanda! And get out! I got stuff to do. I began dialing a different number.
Fine. Be a jerk. I'm still charging you the full hour.
She climbed from the bed and dressed quickly. Oh, good. More cash down the crapper. And humans were getting pricey. Whatever. Just get out and be quiet. The call went through as Amanda gathered her things and stalked out, slamming the door.
It's your nickel.
Toshi, it's me. You still got that connection at the post office?
Yeah, what do you need?
Even in a world dominated by computers, people still sent physical letters, received goods bought online. Paperless society, my rosy red backside. A lady I'm looking for recently changed her address. I need to know where her mail's being forwarded. Name's Irene Chang. I'm sending you her old address.
Gee, Stanley, I don't know.
If you don't want your wife to see photos of you and Kasumi in Vegas last year, you get me that address in an hour. I hung up. Christ, I was getting back talk everywhere I went. One more call. This one was really gonna suck.
Yes?
Mr. Rhodes, we have a situation. I'm dealing with it, but you should know.
AD Police Headquarters.
The AD Police Tower is full of all sorts of wasted space. See, it's an old converted office building. One of the few to more or less survive the big earthquake. In the days following the leveling of Tokyo, it was used as the central rally point for the relief efforts. Then, some bright boy had the idea to make it the civic hub of the new city services. When that eventually proved impractical, we inherited it lock, stock, and barrel. The end result of its colorful past is that the tower has floors and floors of office space, equipment that's tied into water, sewer, and power systems for the entire city, jail space for human offenders, mechanical bays for fire engines and police vehicles, and a helipad facility that can service a city's worth of helicopters and other such aircraft. And almost all of it's empty. See, most of our equipment and maintenance is done in the below-ground reinforced areas. Urban planning at its finest. It does mean, however, that if you want to keep the activities of a certain task force completely under wraps and secret from the rest of the ADP, it's really freaking easy. You just move said task force upstairs. Daly and I had desks in the bullpen up on the 23rd floor. There were maybe a dozen more ADP detectives in the new Night Watch unit. Of course, it wasn't the task force's actual name. We didn't have an official name. We didn't exist. That point had been driven home over and over again at our first briefing early that morning. The group was headed up by a Lieutenant Omura. He was a somewhat dumpy middle-aged guy. Everything about him screamed middle management paper-pushing bureaucrat.
Ladies and gentlemen, the purpose of this unit is to identify and detain these individuals.
Behind him, a slideshow of still images began playing. The image of the green one flashing a vague salute at me was particularly embarrassing.
They seem to call themselves the Nightsabers. For now, the mainstream media is deriding them as an urban legend. But frankly, that cover story can't hold up much longer. They've appeared at every major boomer incident in the last 8 months. Sometimes they just seem to observe. Others, they intervene. Most recently, a month ago, at the Loop Freeway incident. It would seem their primary focus is trying to do our job for us. However, they've been spotted attacking civilian gangs in the Rift as well.
The images changed to the same power-armored units attacking one of the more violent motorcycle gangs that thrived in that part of the town until a few months ago.
All the information we have on them has been forwarded to your task force inboxes. Many of you had first-hand experience or sightings of these Nightsabers. Please add your own observations to the file, but do not discuss it outside this room.
The briefing broke up soon after, and spent the rest of the morning going over the file. It was mostly technical speculations. Reading it was like watching paint dry. I was losing the war of the drooping eyelids when I realized Daly at the desk across from mine was talking to me.
So, am I wrong?
Huh? Sorry, was lost in technobabble.
Sheesh, Leon. I was saying, isn't it odd that Omura will head this thing? He's not really a cop, he's only a lieutenant because he's our liaison with Genom.
I grunted noncommittally. Nothing about this assignment made any sense. Sure, these Nightsabers were breaking the law, and they needed to go down for it. But why all the secrecy?
Speaking of, what the heck was she doing here?
Who, the lady behind the Mora at the meeting?
Yeah, Kate Madigan. She's a senior VP over at Genom, heads their corporate affairs division.
Why is Genom's HR department interested?
Are you kidding me? She's not HR, she's the head of their dirty tricks squad. If half the things I heard about her are true...
He shuddered.
Hey, Leon! Daly!
Mike Newcastle was coming over to our end of the room. He was one of the few ADP investigators to come over from the normal police. He'd been a big deal in their narcotics division or something, but he transferred here because he wanted a change. He'd been quite a help in the case involving the Boomer Cybernetics a couple weeks back.
I'm starving. I'm gonna go get a burger. Wanna go?
Yeah, as long as you're driving. I rode the bike today. Daly, you coming?
No, you guys go. I want to finish up here.
10 minutes later... We were pulling into traffic in Mike's car. Wow, this is a nice ride. New?
Oh yeah, I got it a couple of weeks ago. It's to celebrate bringing that black market cyber shop down.
It was a nice car. Top of the line new Cadillac, to be exact. The sort of leather and wood trimmed luxury ride that makes heads turn when you drive by and just seems to float along smooth as silk. Wish I could celebrate like this. How do you afford this on a cop's salary? He laughed.
No, I didn't. My wife's a writer. Does a lot of those flowery romance novels. Makes 4 times what I do.
So you do this for fun? I'm insanely jealous, Mike. I think I hate you. The car screen beeped and indicated an incoming cell call marked private. Mike put on a small earbud and answered the call. Being polite, I turned away, pretending not to be there. I could only sort of vaguely hear a teeny male voice coming over the small speaker. I tried to focus on recalling the lyrics to my favorite song of Priss's.
No. Yeah, I will.
Not here, not here. No one here but us pockets of air. Then I distinctly heard two words. Disc and evidence. Cop instincts kicked in, and I stopped trying to distract myself.
No, nothing yet. I'll take care of it. Yeah, I'm sure. I will.
I heard the slight click of the other person hanging up, but Mike kept talking.
Right, dear. Love you too. See you tonight.
Oh, and I'd so been looking forward to lunch.
ADP Headquarters.
I was just finishing up my lunch when a shadow darkened my desk. What do you want, Leon? You only ever come down here when you need something.
Oh, come on, that's not true.
I just quirked an eyebrow at him.
Okay, yeah. I need you to look into somebody without causing a fuss.
Oh?
Look, it's probably nothing, but I want you to look up everything you can on Mike Newcastle.
The detective from Cyber that got kicked up to Night Watch?
How do you know about that?
Leon, the day something happens here I don't know about, worry. I'll look into it.
Thanks, kid. I owe you.
As he left, I reflected that it must be the seriousness of his expression that kept me from ripping him to shreds over calling me a kid.
Lena Yamazaki's apartment.
Wednesday night is always spent with the team at home base. We go through physical training in the simulators, or if we've seen action in the last week, go over film of the latest incidents and critique ourselves and the others. Always learning, that's the goal. It was a bit early to head out for the session, but Irene was home already, and the last thing I needed was her deciding to tag along. She was curled up on the couch, finally reading Eric's journal. Poor kid, she was so torn up inside. I hope she wasn't setting herself up for more heartache. It was a short drive across the river, and soon I was keying open the security door and parking in the underground loading dock. Usually, I'm the first one there. I live so dang close. Well, aside from Mackie, who I think lives in the mech bay, and Henderson, who never seems to sleep. This time, though, Nanny's scooter was parked off to the side, and she was waiting for me just outside the changing room.
So, what did you want to see me about?
This. I fished the disc out of my pocket, and her face lit like a Christmas tree.
Where the heck did you get one of those? I haven't seen one in ages!
Irene found it in one of her boxes of stuff. What is it?
That, Lena, is an old multi-tier Green Ray disc. They used them for data backup like 20 years ago. You said Irene found it?
Yeah, it was in Eric's journal. Can you read the disc?
Who do you think you're talking to? Come on, I know there's a green drive around here somewhere.
2 minutes later, we were sitting at the base's computer station, an old dusty disc reader hooked up by a dozen cables to the system's expansion socket.
Okay, disk is intact, file structure's pretty standard. No obvious traps. Oh, crud. It's password protected.
Is that really a problem for Miss Cyberpunk?
Please, no comments from the peanut gallery. But to answer your question, these things have Omega-level code locks. If I enter the wrong code even once, the whole thing erases. Ah! He put a front gate on the disk.
What?
It's a program I can run without endangering the data. It's sort of a hint to the password. He probably intended someone to be able to guess it. Let's see now.
An image of ancient columns appeared, and a quickly scrolling block of text in a language I didn't understand.
Meus aminos est eros per. Huh, this guy's terminology is kind of off. I think he's trying to say belongs to, but it came out is owned by.
You can translate that?
Yeah, it's just Latin.
You understand Latin?
What, you don't? Anyway, there are two passcodes. My soul is owned by blank, my love is owned by blank. We just gotta fill in the blanks.
Oh, that's clever. Try it myself and Irene.
Okay. Yep. We're in. Huh. Bunch of what looks like case files.
That tracks. He worked for a pharmaceutical company. Wait, there's a file marked overview. Hit it.
My name is Eric Yamada. If you're seeing this, I'm probably dead or missing. I was an accounting clerk at Whitmark Medical's Tokyo Biomed Complex. I was assigned to monitor the MASS program, run by this man.
A photo of a powerfully built man with a round face and short cropped hair and mustache appeared.
Kenneth Rhodes. At first, it looked like just a failed line of experiments. Nothing major. But then it suddenly righted itself.
Eric took a drink of water and shakily continued.
The turnaround coincided with the addition of Gene Stanley to the project.
Another photo. This time a wiry, almost weaselly-looking man with dark hair.
Stanley isn't a chemist or a doctor. He's a mid-level manager. But all of a sudden, the project was far below budget once again. After some digging, I believe I discovered proof that Stanley is engaging in illegal testing of the mass serums on human beings. Further, that he is doing so by providing the drugs to the black market for distribution within Megatokyo. The mass program was intended to produce augmentation drugs for military applications. The danger to the populace of allowing this to continue is beyond extreme.
The screen went black as the vid input died.
Holy crap! He wasn't kidding! If these records are right, they've not only been testing on unsuspecting people, they've killed several dozen of them. Bad interactions, genetic susceptibility.
We've got to show Celia this, right away.
Office of Gene Sten, Whitmark Medical Labs, Megatokyo Facility.
It normally doesn't take Toshi this long. I was wondering if maybe I should send him another photo of him and that stripper in Vegas to motivate him when he finally got back to me.
Irene Chang is listed as forwarding her mail to the residence of one, Alina Yamasaki. It's a small apartment right off the Loop Highway. I'm forwarding you the exact address.
Excellent, Toshi. Your marriage is safe. For now, at least. Say hi to the little woman for me. I hung up before he could respond. I could just picture the useless little punt sputtering into a dial tone. I brought out the other phone, the special one. The one I use for this purpose only. My own little red telephone. Say what you will about the Tin Man. He answers promptly. Found her. The address should be hitting you now. She's living with a friend or something. Wrap this up.
Call you when it's done.
Meanwhile, in the Tinsel City area, Megatokyo.
I've never felt comfortable in Tinsel City. Here, everything is expensive and exclusive, and the people are no exception. I mean, for Christ's sakes, it's like walking into a fashion magazine. The men all worry about their hair being messed up, and the women are tall, tapering things that apparently haven't eaten since their 12th birthday. It's so incredibly the opposite of my style that I expect the police to swoop down and haul me away every time I even drive into the general vicinity. Celia and Mackie live here, though. They own a building known around the area as Ladies 633. The Stingrays live on the top couple floors. Celia also owns a boutique at ground level, the Silky Doll. The rest of the building is full of places for women to make themselves more attractive to their equally superficial male counterparts and superior to the other wannabe Barbies. Yeah, I have some issues. I pulled my bike into a spot near Celia's private entrance to the building. Apparently, I cut off a BMW, and the lady driving it glared daggers at me as she trundled off to find another place to display her car while she shopped. Okay, maybe a lot of issues. Celia's given us all the passcode to get into the foyer upstairs, but before I'd even reached the keypad, the door slipped open and Henderson stepped out.
Miss Priscilla?
Henderson, and only Henderson, gets to use my full name. It usually drives me up the wall, but honestly, Miss Pris sounds so much worse, and I can't get him to drop the title. Hey, is Celia still here? I wanted to catch her before she left.
I'm afraid not, miss. She had a business meeting across town. I believe she was heading to the other property directly.
Well, shoot. The dear old guy smiled.
You seem troubled. Is it something I can help you with, perhaps?
Maybe. I'm worried about her.
Ah, the incident with Master Mackie some days back?
I nodded. I haven't known her very long, but know, it seems like she's stretching herself so thin. I'm afraid she's gonna break if she isn't careful.
Quite. Mistress Celia is...
Please don't say she's complicated. Everyone says that. Another smile.
She cares very deeply. Sometimes she has trouble understanding that she is not the only one who thinks the reward outweighs the risk.
How long have you known her? He glanced away.
In one way or another, her entire life.
There was definitely a story there, but I could see that he didn't want to talk about it, and I didn't want to push him. I was about to let him off the hook and leave when...
I heard Henderson speak just as I came around the corner. I'd needed some files from my personal computer at home, and now I was glad I'd stopped before continuing on to home base. Pris was out front of the building, talking to Henderson. About me. Anger rose like a flood. How dare she go behind my back? And to involve Henderson? His mental state being what it is, she could push too hard and maybe cause him to revert. I had to stop this. Excuse me, but what exactly is going on here? She turned, guilty eyes at once flicking away.
Oh, I was just looking for you.
Why? You're supposed to be meeting me and the others in a few minutes, aren't you? I glanced from her to Henderson, who should know better. He bowed and left. The next time you have a question about me, ask me. How dare you go interrogate my associates behind my back?
Hey, I wasn't interrogating anyone. If you must know, I was worried about you.
Yes. Calm down, Celia. She didn't know what she'd almost done. It wasn't like you told anyone about what was concealed in Henderson's mind. I'm fine. Now, I'll meet you at home base in a few minutes.
Right. See you there.
She was fuming inside. I could see it. Damn it all. In my anger, I'd botched this. But it wasn't the time or place to make amends. She got back on her bike and peeled back into traffic. I watched her go. One more friend probably gone for good.
Night Saber's home base.
Pris stormed into home base like she was looking for something to hit. That happens sometimes. I'm glad she's on our side, and she's my friend. But my God, does that woman have a temper. But when Celia came in looking like she wanted something to kill, that was when we knew something had happened. It was a tense night. There wasn't a good time to bring up the matter of what Nene and I have discovered. I decided to talk to Celia after the session was done. Celia drove us hard, but was far harder on herself. Through it all, I think she and Pris said maybe a dozen words to each other, none more than two syllables. It was during the recreation of the freeway battle a couple weeks ago that the dam broke. Pris brought her virtual motoslave in fast and low, changing it over to integrated mode and taking aim at the junction between the boomer cab and cargo trailer with the mech's big rifle. The units separated, and Nene wasn't fast enough to get out of the way. She was crushed into digital goo by the tumbling trailer assembly.
Damn it, Pris! Next time, wait for the all clear!
The simulation dissolved around us, and the four training armatures released us at command. Celia was pinching the bridge of her nose, like she was trying to hold back a major headache.
Look, we're all tired. Let's just call it a night.
Nene and Pris headed for the showers, but I hung back. Celia, are you all right?
Yes. It's just... Before I came over here, I found Pris asking Henderson questions about me.
Did she say why?
She says she's just worried about me. But I don't know. I don't think I can trust someone who goes behind my back like that.
Celia, to be honest, we're all kind of worried about you. You haven't been yourself for a while now.
It's just a bit... There have been some developments. Things I can't talk about. Not yet. I need you to understand that, Lena.
I do. I trust you, Celia. With my life, if it comes to that. She smiled.
Thank you. Was there something you wanted to discuss? I saw you and Nene giving each other covert looks all night.
Actually, yes, there was. I told her about the disc, Eric's video, and the illegal testing.
Is Irene aware of any of this?
No, I don't think so. I remember Eric being under a lot of pressure at work before he died, but I don't think he told Irene about it.
I see. Have Nene clean all traces of our or Irene's involvement with it off the disc. Then see she leaks it to the police.
The police?
Of course. Why?
Well, it's just, I thought... I mean, we have the resources.
Lena, we're not the law. We're not a band of vigilantes with expensive toys.
I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Then what are we, Celia? I thought we protected people when the law can't or won't do so.
We aren't comic book superheroes either.
Don't give me that. You didn't have a problem helping Pris take down those rival biker gangs 6 months ago. How is this different?
That was a mistake. If you knew half the problems that rash action gave us.
They can't have been that bad. You never mentioned them.
They weren't your concern!
Celia, you're my concern, dammit!
I got enough of this from Pris. I don't need it from you two. Go hit the showers.
I could have spit fire. Celia and I were best friends. We went back as far as I could remember. She'd never been this cold. Not once. My voice wouldn't come. I couldn't form the words. I turned on my heel and left the training room, tears stinging as I went.
I watched Lena go. Of all of us, I thought she at least understood our purpose. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe this whole concept had been a bad idea. The more I tried to hold the Nightsabers to course, the more the others were determined to undermine me. I finally left the room as well. Instead of heading for the changing area, though, I went to the data center. I set back into the deactivated data dive unit. The lights were so low as to nearly be off. The room was quiet. It was a good place to hide from reality for a little while. I could be alone in here, at least. Or so I thought. The door of the small chamber opened a moment later, and Henderson stepped in. I suppose you're going to explain why you allowed Pris to question you? He didn't respond. Instead, he took a deep breath and stood straight, his shoulders unbending from their usual slight stoop, and his posture becoming instantly less deferential, more confident.
We need to talk, Celia.
Are you sure you want to risk this, Uncle? Deactivating Henderson is dangerous.
It isn't pleasant, but he would never put you across his knee and spank you. I think it may come to that.
Oh, not you too.
Celia, you can't take this role alone. Sooner or later, it's going to get you killed. And then where would your plan be?
Don't talk to me about the plan, Harrison. You may have been my father's teacher when you were alive, but you aren't him.
No, I'm not. I was his friend in life and death. He gave me the second chance to put things right, to help you. And I'll do it.
I curled up, bringing my knees to my chest and wrapping my arms around them, shielding the wound I felt in the center of my heart. I'm sick of risking friends. I'm sick of watching that evil old man laugh at me in my dreams.
Celia, my time is short, so let me tell you two things. First, the Night Sabers are more than your friends. You've gathered a remarkable net of strangers around you and made them your family. It's not weakness to share the burdens with them. It is a strength.
I blinked at him. Harrison Alvarez had never been that... poetic.
Second, the hard suits, the facilities, the plan... They are not all your father left you. Trust him. He hasn't set you on this impossible path alone.
What? What else did he leave? Tell me! But it was too late. Harrison was already slumping, falling back into Henderson once again. A moment later, he blinked in confusion.
Oh, excuse me, I didn't mean to intrude, mistress.
It's all right. You weren't. Henderson?
Hmm?
Thank you. For everything.
Of course, mistress. Glad to be of service.
Lena Yamazaki's apartment.
I snarled and fumed the whole way home. I didn't sign on to this crazy crusade thinking it was to further Celia's vague idea of revenge for her dad's murder. I wanted to help people. The world was going to hell and nobody cared. Well, I cared, damn it. I convinced Celia that the cops weren't going to do anything. After all, this had been going on for so long. How could a novice drug supplier possibly avoid the cops? Answer, they couldn't. Somebody had to be getting paid to look away. I pulled into my usual parking space. The big shiny black truck that was my neighbor's midlife crisis was parked so close I had to wriggle a bit to get out. Part of me wanted to run my key along his paint job, but he'd know who'd done it. The elevator took its sweet time. If I wasn't tired and sore from training, I'd have taken the stairs and saved time. You know, I was getting pretty sick of things in general. Maybe a change of scene was a good idea. Maybe... Hey, maybe Irene and I could go halvesies on a new apartment. A bigger one, of course, but together. I found I really liked having a roommate. Particularly one who could cook and didn't mind doing the housework. I decided to propose the idea to her as I got off the elevator. The apartment door was slightly ajar. Thought trumped instinct. I stood to one side of the door and called in. Irene! No answer. I took my phone out and called the police emergency number. Hello, police? I said very loudly. My front door was open when I got home and there's no answer from inside. I prodded the door open with the toe. Our stuff was strewn everywhere. Blood. Instinct trumped thought. I ran in. Irene! She was lying in a pool of blood, staring blankly at the ceiling, a single blank page of Eric's book clutched in her hand. I fell to my knees, dropping the phone and not caring that the operator demanded more information. Irene was dead.
You've been listening to Bubblegum Crisis Tinsel City Blues, Episode 2, a Forward Momentum production, based on the anime Bubblegum Crisis, which is copyright AIC Artmic. Featured in this episode were Rina Adachi as Lena Yamazaki, Taylor Carlson as Pris, Nathan P. Butler as Gene Stanley, Kristen Mass as Celia Stingray, Christopher Stadther as Leon McNichol, and Lindsay Steinler as Nene Romanova. Also heard in this episode were Mike Dent as Mackie Stingray, Chris Walker as Henderson, Tanya Milojevic as Irene Chang, Eric Olp as Daley Wong, Edward Tiong as Brian J. Mason, Devlin James as Quincy Rosenkreutz, Alex Gilmore as Kenneth Rhodes, Will Navison as Mike Newcastle, Chase Johnson as Eric Yamada, and Gwendolyn Jensen Woodard as Sylvie. This is Dylan Spencer. The episode was written and directed by Devin Cox. Music for the series is drawn primarily from the Bubblegum Crisis anime. For a complete music and vocal credit list, please visit forwardmomentumproductions.com/BGC. Bubblegum Crisis Tinsel City Blues is a non-profit fan production produced for the enjoyment of the fans. All rights to Bubblegum Crisis, the music, and non-original sound effects used herein remain the property of their original creators. No infringing claims are intended.